In quantum physics, things aren't really real until they're brought into being by some sort of measurement.
Welcome back to The Process. I'm Laurent John.
Quantum particles all dance on top of each other and become entangled through touch.
Something you might not know about me, I studied medicine at university and my dad was a physics teacher. But believe me, I'm no expert on this either. One thing I do love about working here, though, is it always makes you think about and helps you understand sometimes daunting concepts through a very unique angle.
You know, we think of a particle as being like a snooker ball or a football, whereas in quantum physics, they lose this rigidity and sort of smear out in ways that we kind of wouldn't understand or fix reality to smear out.
Libby Heaney is one of our artists in residence here and is one of the first artists in the world to work with quantum computers.
And I currently make work thinking about the sort of future impacts of technologies, creating sci-fi stories around these technologies and critiquing some of the sort of current practices of big tech companies.
And if anyone is going to take your hand and lead you through some of the completely mind-bending ideas in quantum physics, Libby is the person. In this episode, she looks at how other ideas outside of the world of physics can help us get closer to the concept of quantum entanglement.
Quantum physics is a physical theory that describes the microscopic world. So if you think about the width of our hair, these atoms and molecules are about 1,000 times smaller than that. So really, really small things. And when you zoom into that level of reality, things start to behave really strangely. For instance, particles can be entangled to each other and blur together in a combination of all possibilities at once. Einstein called this spooky action at a distance. So if one particle is on one side of a world and you do something to it, it affects a particle, say, on the other side of a world as well. It's such a strange description of reality compared to kind of how we experience the world. Things are very fluid and slime-like almost. And I guess it's always fascinated me because, you know, we live in this reality that's very fixed, and especially at the moment, it feels like there's quite a few issues in the world. You often ask yourself, is there more to this? It's almost like you're accessing a type of spirituality, but through physics. And I think that's one of the reasons why I switched across to art. It really allows me to explore things like quantum entanglement using methods that scientists don't really ever use. Things like analogy, embodiment, poetics, and metaphor. In this podcast, I'm continuing that approach. So I really want to use metaphor and ideas around intuition and spirituality to understand quantum entanglement or entanglement in general. I've really become obsessed with slime. I'm interested in slime in relation to quantum physics because I think quantum particles are slime-like. They kind of spread out in space and time like slime, and they become fluid.
My name is Susanne Wiedlich. I'm a science writer, freelance science writer. My background is in biology and political science.
So it was last year when I read Suzanne Wiedlich's book, Slime, A Natural History, and it was really amazing because I'd already been making slime at home and sort of playing with it. So I bought the book and it was so fascinating because she really goes through kind of slime as being fundamental to life, fundamental, but it's really overlooked. It's absolutely wonderful to be speaking with you, Suzanne. I really enjoyed your book, Slime, which I have just here with me. So what is slime and why do you think it deserves more love?
That's actually a great question, and it took me a long time to answer it, because the slimes that I'm interested in, that's biological slimes, slimes that organisms produce, be it microbes, plants, animals, humans. And the amazing thing for me was to find out that all these slimes are rather similar. They're called hydrogels. And for a long time, I think science wasn't focused on that material. It's always been seen as like a byproduct of the body, not important. Even in our own body, I mean, of course, we all know about mucus because that's the one you can see, like if you have a cold and your nose is running. But the other hydrogels, you don't get to see, and they have boring names like the connective tissue. I mean, what kind of name is that? And of course, it's a totally fascinating substance. And without that connective tissue, we would fall apart. We would just be a heap of cells. A whole three-dimensional structure depends on hydrogels.
Yeah, that's so interesting. As you know, my background's in quantum physics, and I've been using slime as a metaphor for, say, quantum particles, so atoms and molecules. When you cool them down really cold, they start to, in a metaphorical sense, behave like slime, in the sense they spread out in space and time and kind of become fluid. But they're beyond representation. It's actually impossible to represent a picture of a quantum particle. And I guess representation is something of slime is something you try and get at in your book, how it's very difficult to actually pin down what slime is.
Yeah, that's true. It's really hard. And it's even a problem for me when I write about slime. What picture do you use, right? You can't just publish the text. You need a picture, but there aren't really good examples, except disgusting ones, of course. Slime, biological slime, is everywhere. It's in our bodies, it's in every organism, but it's also in the environment. Microbes, for example, but animals as well, produce so much slime that it's everywhere in all types, even in the desert. But you can't see that. For example, the ocean. So it's covered, bad news, sorry, in the skin of slime. But it's so thin that you can't see it with your eyes, but it's there. It's obviously important. But hardly anyone knows about it. And the ones who know that it exists still don't know much because research isn't just there yet to really explain it. But still, you don't see it. And the same in the desert. Those tiny living communities that are built on slime, they're called biological soil crusts. And I try to see them. I crush down and crawl along in the dunes where they're supposed to be. And still, I couldn't identify them. So the slime is everywhere. And I've even had interviewer ask me, looking around, slime, do you see one right now? I can say, yeah, it's there. I don't honestly know, after so many years thinking about that, how to picture it. But it's there. It's important. It's changing. We all depend on it. But I think in the end, probably your glass sculptures are as good as it can get.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, like, it's like, yeah, the glass sculptures are almost like cartoon slime, because that's what I guess people have in their sort of popular imagination. I mean, quantum physics obviously is a totally different theory, but, you know, everything that we see every day is based on these microscopic particles, yet we do not observe quantum effects like superposition or entanglement. So with that, would you mind, would you be able to talk about slime as a form of entanglement in your own experience?
Yeah, like in preparation for the podcast, I've thought about, obviously, about these topics a lot. I have to say, in school, I love biology, I love chemistry, I even loved math, but I hated physics. I wanted the world to be parceled up, so that I can, you know, that I can get it, I can understand it, I can learn about it. So I think that's where I see a clear parallel to slime. It can be hard just to live with the fact that there's stuff that's hard to understand, or that, you know, they're not understanding. It's maybe not even a bug, it's a feature. Though I would think that, unlike quantum physics, when it comes to slime, of course, there's this huge emotional component to it. You have this material that's somewhere between solid and fluid and can very quickly become more fluid, more solid, like snails, for example. They're perfectly happy to crawl along and they don't stick on their own slime, obviously, unless they want to. We've all seen snails being like on a tree hanging down. And even if it rains, they will not drop off. And then some snails even produce the slime if they're attacked that not even birds can pick them away. It's so strong. It's so sticky. And I think that makes people uneasy. Yeah. About the entanglement, is it really similar enough? You will know more about that than I do.
Yeah. I guess on the entanglement front, it's like slime definitely isn't entangled using the quantum, like the technical definition, because that really only applies to microscopic particles. But in terms of slime existing throughout living organisms in different ways, like this idea of shape-shifting that you brought up, I think that's really, really relevant to helping people understand the ideas in quantum physics. For instance, when a quantum particle is measured, or depending on the context it finds itself in, it changes its state of being, which, you know, thinking about how the snail could stick itself to the tree, or it can continue moving depending on the context. I've actually been using slime as well in my work to talk about the slimy world of big tech. You know, in English at least, we say, like, to be slimy is when someone appears benign and pleasant, but are actually, there's like a sinister or an unpleasantness or a sneakiness about them. So in that sense, do you think, if we're thinking about kind of patriarchal sort of modes of seeing the world versus perhaps a more slimy way of seeing the world, which is more fluid and plural, do you think it would help if we, as humans, were to think and act in a more slimy way?
I actually do, yeah. I mean, it comes down, first of all, to real slimes, biological slimes, like I said, like the glues. They're so much better than the ones that we used. They're non-toxic. You can recycle them. I mean, every single snail and lots of marine animals, they can stick to the ground and then just move on, reuse the slime, change its behavior. That's something that we can't do and that actually material scientists are trying to replicate. Marine slimes, they hope to use them in example for surgery. I totally get the big tech slimy approach. But on the other hand, you could see it as being slimy. Yeah, we have that in German as well. Someone who's a slimer is someone who is a smooth talker to the bosses. But that's also, let's say, what small talk does, for example. It's like, it's the lubricant you have in social situations, and you need that. We need slimers, right? If you're at a party, you need a few slimers, or everyone will just stand there and yeah, it's not very smooth. Let's put it that way.
One of the things I really like is how it seems that slime really allows us to think beyond fixed categories and beyond these rigid boundaries. And so, you know, I always see slime as a substance that is in itself beyond kind of dualism. Another area I've been really thinking about, which helps me understand quantum entanglement, is quantum listening. Slime is more visual or physical manifestation of this quantum void, whereas quantum listening really helps to tap into something more internal, more intimately.
So, what is quantum listening? The quantum listener listens to listening. Quantum listening simultaneously creates and changes what is perceived. The perceiver and the perceived co-create through the listening effect.
Quantum listening comes out of a practice of deep listening. It was developed by Pauline Oliveros. It's around listening to everything that there is and also reflecting about when you're not listening.
Quantum listening is the ability to discern all that there is in a single moment. I'm Ione. Some people call me Ione, and I am a dream facilitator. I am a deep listener and a quantum listener. I am a performer, a writer, director, a lot of things. Anyway, I'm an artist.
I really wanted to explore this with Ione, who was Pauline Oliveros' partner and collaborator for many years, and she was deeply involved in deep listening and quantum listening for a long time.
Within the process of deep listening, people would ask her what, for example, well, what exactly is deep listening? And often she would begin to say, I don't know, which would freak a lot of people out, or some people anyway. And she had a good time with that. And what she really wanted to say is that she was still discovering what deep listening is, and that it is a process, it's an ongoing process.
So I studied quantum physics as a scientist, and particularly with a particular focus on entanglement. So it seems to me that quantum listening really, in some sense, entangles both the macro and the expansive and all possibilities with the infinitesimally small and the minute. So I just wondered if you could talk a bit about quantum listening in relation to entanglement itself specifically.
Yes, when we, the more one practices listening, the more one is connected to all there is. Being connected to all there is includes being connected to the moment, but all again, there's this mysterious element.
So I guess, yeah, so this idea of non-local or entangled quantum listening. So I have such a vivid dream life where, like, my dreams are incredibly, like, colourful and imaginative. And for me, dreaming feels very quantum, super fluid. All different possibilities are kind of jostling from my subconscious into my conscious, entangling in indeterminate ways. So I'm curious to learn more about how you use quantum listening in your dreaming, in your dream incubation and healings.
Well, it's all about awareness. You know, I've kind of dedicated my life and my life's work toward making dreaming a way of life, expanding consciousness to encompass dreams on many different levels of dreaming. So that's a dreaming, that's nighttime dreaming, that's daytime dreaming as well.
What would your daytime dreaming look like if you could paint us a picture?
Yeah, what's happening? Well, right now I'm looking at all these little animals on my shelf, and they've been kind of calling to me during this conversation that we're having. They're across the room here, and kind of a coziness that is being projected. Kind of remember us, And that is part of my dream right now. Then there's the sound of the trucks outside. Just as there used to be the deer out there coming down the street. But they're building something. They're building a new bridge, so that's why the trucks are coming there. Okay, I'm dreaming.
Yes. Is this... You mentioned about quantum flirting.
Yes, they're flirting with me. They're definitely, particularly the white buffalo over there. The white buffalo is flirting with me, and okay, she's reminding me of my relationship to Mary Thunder, a beautiful Native American chief, woman chief. The prophecy is that when they're born, when a white buffalo is born, that it's an amazing transformation for society, a time for change and shift. And she had buffalo. She had buffalo on her land. And the white buffalo was not far away when it was born. So I have a stuffed one who's looking at me right now, telling me about that, and says, saying, remember the shamanic element. All right? Remember the connection between what can be called shamanic, could be have other names. Remember that connection in terms of life meanings and in terms of all that there is, and that is part of what we might call quantum. You know, quantum is just a word that describes many, many ancient traditions.
I think that's so important to mention, that quantum physics is like ancient knowledge that has just been rediscovered in the last 100 years by Western science. And I think that a lot of scientists, from my experience, a lot of scientists would disagree with that conflation, but it's just different manifestations of the same knowledge. And I think we've lost that in the West. What I'm saying is it's kind of, how can you bridge perhaps the spiritual teachings of quantum with this sort of very technical, scientific, hard interface and allow for something that feels quite intuitive and visceral to come out that is beyond language and perhaps we don't understand?
Yeah, well, you are the answer. You are the answer, you know. I mean, I think it's about looking and elsewhere. I think what you're doing, you know, is the, and who you are and your process, that is the answer. And I know that Pauline was wedded to technology, which was in service or in tandem with creating and her sound and her music, you know, so... It's not about that separation. It's about embracing technology, you know, which you're doing. So I just feel Pauline's just sending you lots of energy. She's just, yeah, go, you go, girl.
Amazing. Actually, perhaps given that you said she's sending me energy, is it okay to share something personal from my side with you and ask you a personal question?
Maybe, sure, I think so. Let's see what happens.
We can see where it goes. So I lost my younger sister 3 years ago, quite actually around this time, and it was quite sudden. And I'm not Christian, I'm not religious in that sense, although I do believe in kind of a wider spirituality. But I was drawn to like ideas from quantum physics to kind of imagine reconnecting with her. Reconnecting through quantum made a lot of sense to me, yeah. And still does. So yeah. I wondered what, you know, obviously Pauline has passed now, but I wondered what your thoughts are on this sort of reconnection.
Right. Well, We've always had that kind of connection throughout our 34-year relationship, 32 years around there, being together in physical form, shall we say. So she is still present in many, many ways. You know, there's been a difference. There's the loss of the physical, you know, the physical, except that, you know, sometimes there's a visual. And Pauline has been very, very present. So I feel that, yes, there's a connection and has been a connection beyond what we call death. You know, it's still a great mystery to many what happens. And yet we know in a quantum world that there are some mysteries that are unexplored, so we can't really just say, oh, there's nothing there. Also, in terms of dreams and dreaming, we find that is one of the easiest ways that we humans seem to have of connecting interdimensionally.
Yeah, I feel like with my sister, sometimes I can really feel her. Mm-hmm. Like, her, I mean, maybe, you know, like it's almost like a full body sensation, like an inner hug. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And in my mind's eye, I can see her and even hear her if I listen carefully enough. I mean, it is comforting. Mm-hmm. It's sad, very sad, but it's also comforting. And mm-hmm. and of course, that's while I'm awake, and also when I'm asleep. I mean, I dream so often about her as well. So I think mm-hmm. it's really nice. Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's good. But I thought it might be relevant given. Yeah. I don't know. I just felt like I needed to ask this question to you.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Pauline shows up. We did a lot of experimenting when we were together during those 30 some years of connecting interdimensionally, and of we could contact each other if we needed to or wanted to, and over distance, shall we say. So we did a lot of that then, and so she's very present now too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel so moved after speaking to Ione. And actually, really strangely and wonderfully, last night I had a dream about Whitney Houston, which we played at my sister's funeral, one of her songs. And at that point in my dream, I felt my sister touch me. She put her hand on my shoulder and I woke up. And it was so real and wonderful and comforting, and we definitely communicated through dimensions there. And yeah, I feel like, you know, I'm just so excited to continue on this journey of understanding how quantum enables us to think about not only these spiritual moments of interconnectedness, but really how humans are urgently in need of these new modes of connection, and quantum entanglement could be a really fruitful model and method for helping us to sort of overcome some of these feelings of disconnect and alienation we have in the modern world.
Thanks to Libby Heaney, to science writer Suzanne Vedlick, and to artist, quantum listener, and dream specialist, Ione. Music for the series is by Carbeard, with additional music here by Pauline Oliveros and Ione. The Process is produced by Alana Chads, and I'm Laurent John. Until next time.